Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 5. All right, we got down near the end of the chapter last time in Proverbs 5. We're going to go down to verse 20. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 20, and pick back up pretty much where we left off. You will see that with regard to the to this man and his love for his wife, at the end of verse 19, "And be thou ravished always with her love," it says verse 20, "And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger?" And in a society that's almost completely carried away with adultery and fornication, that is a very wise admonition, don't you think? All right, verse 21, there's a reason for it, and this is a reason that that folks ought to ever keep in mind. The context, of course, is the concupiscence, the lasciviousness back, you know, that the Lord is against back in chapter 5, verse 19 and 20. But the reason that we ought to behave ourselves is, verse 21, "For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings." All right? Now, folks, you know the verses. "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good," right? It also says that the eyes of the Lord, it says the ways of the man, rather, are before the eyes of the Lord. Now, you know what you have to be careful of, folks? You have to be careful. All of us have been guilty of it at one time or another, and probably more than one time. Everybody is allowed a private life. You know that. I mean, even within your own home, your kids ought to be allowed the privacy to dress and go to the restroom and all those things without somebody peering around. But you know what? There's a difference between a private life and a secret one. And sometimes there's a mistake made in that, where when sin is discovered, that, you know, somebody is quick to say, "Well, that's none of your business. That's my private business." There's a difference between a private life and a secret life for a Christian, right? Now it says here in verse 21, "The eyes of man, the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings." Now, you know what? More often than not, on a practical day-to-day basis, most of us don't even believe that. Because, you know what? If you are inclined to sneak around and get in some sort of trouble, you know full well that if there was a person standing there, peering over your shoulder, a physical person, that you're not going to go forward with those things. But since the Lord is invisible, you will go forward with those things. That's what I mean. I mean, say, "Oh yeah, I believe that." Well, yeah, you believe that in some theological corner of your mind. But you don't believe it in the sense that God is there in practicality and is actually peering and watching what you're doing. And by the way, it goes deeper than that, because he's peering and watching what you're thinking, what you're saying, and all those things, right? Well, it says there, it says, "The ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings." You know, one of the things that's kind of included in that, and which is actually spoken of down in verse 22, is the fact, if God is that interested in you, and he is that interested in you, and if he is omnipresent, and he is omnipresent, you know, folks, it just doesn't take that much for the Lord to stick his finger in and thwart what you're doing or expose what you're doing. Folks, I don't know how many times does it have to happen in life? You know, for all of us, I mean, the number of times, I'm talking about myself too on this thing, but how many times does it have to happen that something done in secret is still somehow, some way, exposed? so that it's not secret anymore. And how do all those things work out in the end, you know, where coincidental things happen and fall together in such a way that, oh my goodness, I've been conspired against? Well, it just might be that you've got a living God that's overseeing that thing and thwarting it every time you mess up. Now, you know what? I mean, go at it long enough and maybe it becomes irreversible. Go at it long enough and maybe the Lord decides to just let you go. Go at it long enough and maybe you become hardened to it. And like I said, maybe the Lord lets you go. But while the Lord at least is kind enough to you to thwart your plans, you might ought to stop and consider. Amen? All right, it says, "For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings." He pondereth all his goings. Verse 22, and it goes on to say, "His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins." Verse 22, you know what folks think of God? Folks think that God is a big ogre, you know, with a big axe, and he's just waiting to smite your head off, you know, just as soon as you mess up. Or God is waiting in the heavens, and there's a degree of truth to this. We understand the Lord's going to come back one day in vengeance and fire and so on and judgment, and that's very true. That's a theological fact. But it is also true that, you know, it's not, God is not the only thing you have to worry about if you're going to do wrong. Because one of the things that you have to worry about is that you get trapped and taken in your own sins, in your own iniquities, in your own transgressions, that they catch up to you and you wind up trapped and bound in them. That's what it says, verse 22. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself. Now, folks, this is testified to over and over and over again. Go back to Psalm 7 real quick. Go back to Psalm 7. We could probably just run verses all night, and I'm not going to do that. But Psalm 7, Psalm chapter 7, notice verse 15. He made a pit and digged it and has fallen into the ditch which he made. His mischief shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down upon his own pate. It's just not that unusual a thing in the Bible at all, at all, at all. Look in Proverbs a couple of chapters back. Look in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 18. Proverbs 1:18. Talking about folks that lay a snare for somebody else. And in 1:18, they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. I mean, you wind up falling into your own pit. Look at verse 31. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own devices. And so, again, the danger is that you wind up not just judged by God, but that you wind up caught up and trapped in your own sins, and those sins wind up destroying you. Now, you know what folks have this terrible habit of thinking? They have this terrible habit of thinking that they can quit anytime they want to. And up to a point, that is true, but if you underestimate the power and deceitfulness of sin, you are in the you are a naive soul who has followed a thousand generations before you. You know what I mean? Because look in verse 22. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. I know this may come across as cliche because it's said so often, but sin is binding. Sin is binding. And the worst part of sin is not necessarily the nicotine addiction or the alcohol addiction or the drug addiction. Almost the worst part of it is that it's the addiction of your mind. It's the thought processes by which your heart is set on those things and you go deeper and deeper and deeper. I mean, folks, look, when somebody says a gambling addiction, I can't help but snort. It's not an addiction. There is no drug. I mean, I understand nicotine addiction. I think you should still quit. I understand there's an issue with your flesh crying out for more. I understand that. I understand when somebody takes, you know, a hit of the right kind of drug that they may be stuck for life if you know, they don't take radical procedures. But, you know, when somebody says, I have a gambling addiction, no, you have a character problem. Okay? It has nothing to do with your body. It has to do with you getting, with where your heart is set, and you won't set it somewhere else. Somebody says they have an addiction to pornography. Nuts to that. Now, sin is binding, I'll grant you that. And you continue to go down the road, it'll lead to something else. But it's not addicting. It's not genetic, like folks try to make it into. Now, the danger is spiritual, folks. Look in Romans chapter 1. Some of this will not be any kind of new revelation to any of you. But as a reminder of how this thing works, it is a bad habit to form to be sneaky. It is a bad habit to form to continue to dip your finger in the world's icing and think that a little won't hurt and that you can quit anytime you want to. It's been proven several million times, several hundreds of millions of times, that that's not the case. Romans chapter 1, and I know you folks are familiar with this passage, but notice verse 24, when these folks all started with nothing more insidious than not glorifying God in verse 21 and not being thankful in verse 21 and just having a different perspective of how they should worship God in verse 21 and 22 and 23, verse 24 led them to this place, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, to the lusts of their own hearts. Folks, when the Lord quits dealing with you about the lusts of your own hearts, you're in trouble. And you need to start backing out of the moat, start backing out of the swamp real fast. Verse 25, who changed the truth of God into a lie, worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator. Then verse 26, for this cause God gave them up unto vile affections. And that, somebody was asking me about it on Sunday morning, and I said, the Bible is the only book in the world that tells you the truth about where the homosexual passions come from. It is the only book that tells you that. Everything else will either tell you that, you know, it's genetic, or some such thing, or that it's natural human behavior, so on and so forth. All right? That's not true. It is not genetic any more than any other sin is genetic. Now, folks, for all of us sinners, all sin is genetic. Brother, sin abides in you. And if we're talking about, you know, just sin in general being a genetic issue with us, well, that's very true, because we're born sinners. But if you're trying to blame your behavior on the fact that you inherited something from your mother and father, that is not going to carry any weight with God at all. And the Bible is the only book in the world that tells you exactly where the homosexual passions come from. And it comes from here, verse 26. And all started back in verse 21 with not glorifying God and not being thankful. And the second time around, God gives them up to vile affections. And then when you finally get down to it in verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. There's a progression that goes on, and you can go deeper and deeper into sin until, for all practical purposes, you do lose control. I believe that. Do you believe that? I believe that we live in a sick society. I believe we live in a society that's bound in sin. And, I mean, you wonder, well, where all these people, where all these people came from that live under bridges and are, you know, meth addicts and booze addicts and a little bit of everything else. Well, I'll tell you, it comes from traveling a long road. It's not as simple as somebody taking your pacifier away when you're three and, you know, always being looked down on because you're black or American Indian or Chinese or an ethnic minority or because you have some malformation or something. It's not that simple. It is a long road that leads you down to destruction. Sin is a long, winding spiral path down. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. I'm trying to convince you, you know, we started back here in Proverbs with his own iniquities shall take the wicked himself. He shall be bound with the cords of his sins. I'm trying to convince you that if you go far enough down the road, you will start to lose control. I'm not saying you can't regain it. I'm not saying the Lord won't give it back to you. I'm saying that it becomes harder and harder to back out. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and notice verse 12. And this may seem a strange verse to mention this in, but all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. Okay? Some people like the first half of that verse a lot, huh? All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Now, there's a thought right there, folks. It's not just the expediency in the verse, first half of the verse, but it's about being brought under the power of something or somebody. And I've said before, I'm not one of these guys that thinks drinking coffee's wrong, because I drink plenty of it. But the day that you get up and you can't do without coffee, you may have a problem. I would suggest trying something else. Because I'll not be brought under the power of any. You have to be careful with those things. Some people cannot, apparently, stop the progression of their thoughts. Sometimes people get mad and then claim they can't help it with their behavior. Are they, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? Well, now, if that's the case, you need to backtrack and figure out a way. Because what you just admitted is that you are under the power of something else at certain times. Folks, a man and woman, I understand people are not perfect. I understand that. But you need to have control. I'm not talking about a control by which, you know, you're the captain of your own ship and all this kind of thing. But I'm talking about self-control that's scriptural. Okay? Look in 2 Timothy chapter 2. And I know that you're familiar with this, 2 Timothy chapter 2. You don't want to go here. I know people, and I'm not talking about somebody here. I know people that at any given moment, you know, if they are properly cornered, they will lie every time. Lie every time. It's not even a conscious thought whether they should or not. They no longer have a conscience about lying under certain circumstances. Okay, now folks, you're in trouble. You understand? I know folks that will steal or sneak something, you know, given the right circumstances. That they will do certain things left alone when they think they're alone and nobody's watching and nobody's going to know. You better be careful. Right? All right, now from 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And after a long admonition to Timothy here, he finishes the chapter with verse 25, with this beginning in verse 25. In meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. See, some oppose themselves. Sometimes it's worthwhile in counseling to tell somebody, you know what, you are your own problem. And we don't hear a lot of that anymore. You don't get that too much from Brother Dobson, do you? You are your own problem. Now look, no problem that you have is your mother's problem. No problem that you have is your father's problem. Now, there comes a day, you know, when a man turns, 20, 22, 24. I mean, when you're 18, when you're 16, you know, you're young, you're immature, and there's some things that can be blamed on mom and dad maybe. But, brother, you turn 25 years old. You can't blame it on mama no more. I don't care how you grew up. Maybe you didn't have a mama, and maybe you were raised by wolves. But you've got to get your life straight, and or else you're going to be a wreck. You're going to have to take responsibility for how you behave at 25 years old, or else you know, there is no hope for you except a drug-induced state. Verse 25, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. And see, there is acknowledging that God has a part in that thing. That is not sovereign Calvinistic, a sovereign Calvinistic thing. That is God giving somebody grace or strength to pull out of a bad situation, okay? I mean, some of you folks were wrecks when you got saved, right? I mean, how many of you were drunks? How many of you were drug addicts? How many of you were this? How many of you were that? And left to yourself, you weren't going to pull out of it. Just left to yourself, right? Okay, so this is not some weird Calvinistic thing. It's acknowledging that you have to have help from God. But what I'm trying to get to is verse 26. And that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will. He snaps his fingers and you jump too. You know what, folks? There's a fair segment of our society like that right now. I mean, we read this stupid Obama thing here. I mean, here are a bunch of wacko, apparently women, apparently some men too. When a guy gets molasses on his tongue, they think that it's an epiphany of some sort. Look, I'm not real old, but I remember women swooning during Clinton's first campaign. They thought he was the handsomest, cutest thing around, which is a little beyond me, but I don't understand that thing, folks. You surely you have to be deeper than that. You have to be deeper than just because a guy can talk to go for it. Just because he can talk. Just because he says the magic formula. Young ladies, you better get over the magic formula thing with guys. Hopefully, no guys here. But you got to get over the magic formula with guys. And gentlemen, women have their own magic formulas. And you better get over that too. What's everybody laughing about? Look at Deuteronomy chapter 4 real quick. I'm talking here about a man, his own iniquity shall take the wicked. In the end, it's not just God that lowers the boom and kills you or cripples you. Sometimes it's just that you're left in your own sins and your sins destroy you. And there's a lot less fire and thunder that happen with that, and it's a lot less dignified. But that's how a ton of people die in this life, folks. Deuteronomy chapter 4. And I go down to verse 19. The Lord is giving admonition to Israel. And He's given them the right way and the law and the tabernacle and the proper sequence and ritual and so on. And He says, verse 15, "Take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves, for ye saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire. Why? Lest ye corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image." God said, if I'd shown up as some sort of an image to you people, I know full well that you would have made an image and you would worship the image. Verse 16, "the similitude of any figure, the likeness of any of male or female. The likeness of any beast that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged fowl that flieth in the air, the likeness of anything that creepeth on the ground, the likeness of any fish that is in the waters beneath the earth. And lest thou lift up thine eyes into heaven, unto heaven, and when thou seest the sun and the moon and the stars, even all the host of heaven, shouldst be driven to worship them." That's kind of a scary phrase, huh? Driven to worship them. It says of the maniac of Gadara that he was driven into the wilderness by the devil. All right, now look, you don't need that. Whether it be something truly perverse, or whether it be a bad habit or a bad temper, you don't need to be driven anywhere. Right? All right, back to Proverbs chapter 5. and verse 22, Proverbs 5:22. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself. If you could just remember that really and truly, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. And whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And you keep those things before your eyes. If that's the rein on one side of the horse's mouth and the other rein on the other side of the horse's mouth, you'll be all right, okay? I mean, that's the controller. Back to verse 22. And he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. That sin becomes the master. All right, verse 23. He shall die without instruction. Some people say, well, I'm going to wait till my deathbed and then be converted. You may not have opportunity. You may not have the mind left. Especially these days when they drug you up with morphine and you're out of it for 4 or 5 days before you die. A lot of times, right? But aside from that, he shall die without instruction. You know, the Catholic Church has a thing going where they give last rites and all, try to get there in time to give the last rites. And, you know, in theory, that might be a good enough idea, but it doesn't work very well. Because, folks, if you don't, you know, if you're not tender, you know, if you're not tender when you're healthy, there is no guarantee that you'll be tender when you're ready to die. We've seen that over and over, right? He shall die without instruction. I mean, Herod, eaten of worms, man, died without instruction. You know, Saul fell on his own sword. Died without instruction. For all we know, for all we can tell, Pilate, you know, dies without instruction. He shall die without instruction. And in the greatness of his folly, he shall go astray. In the greatness of his folly, he shall go astray. I have a quote here that no man gets to the right place by going the wrong way. And that's I would say that's pretty good, right? All right, back to Proverbs chapter 6 now. Proverbs 6, verse 1. All right, kind of breaks off and takes up a new subject. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Okay, a surety for thy friend. Your friend has a debt and he needs to borrow some money, and so you become not the cosigner so much as the you're the one that promises to pay the debt if he reneges, right? Okay. Now what you have to be careful for that, I'm not saying that in absolutely every respect. Now I know there's a lot with loans and borrowing in the Bible that some people pretty shallowly set forward, all right? But I can tell you the gist of this. If thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, deliver thyself when thou art come under the hand of thy friend, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. The idea is, your buddy needs to borrow, you know, $1,000 from somebody, and the guy says you don't have anything worth $1,000, and so you step up and say, if he doesn't pay you back $1,000, I'll pay the $1,000. Okay, what you just did is you set yourself up. Okay, you set yourself up for, first of all, maybe your friend decides to leave you in the lurch. Second of all, maybe your friend can't pay it back, and maybe he feels bad about it and just decides to move to California, but you're still stuck with it. He may feel really bad about it and say, you know, I'm really sorry, and I just can't help it, and I just don't know what to do, and he moves to California. Okay? That's the thing. All right, you know, verse 4, give not sleep to thine eyes nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. What's all that about? Well, what that's all about is that, you know, you need to watch putting yourself in a position where that you don't want to give the devil any more openings than he has to have. You got enough problems with the devil as it is, okay? And when you open up, and folks, I mean, I'm not, you know, with the money thing, there's an awful, I didn't come here prepared to talk, you know, to do a money seminar. And I'm no expert on it by any means, but I do know that money's torn up a lot of folks, right? And with the money thing, you really have to be careful. If you are going to, if you're going to loan somebody some money, you ought to be prepared to give it to them in the end. And you need to think to yourself, if somehow my friend isn't able to pay it back, where am I going to be then? Bitter? And so on? You can't go there. Okay? You're better off to say no from the start. Right? All right, verse 4. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. You better be careful what you're doing. You need to go and secure thy friend. Verse 5. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as the bird from the hand of the fowler. You have to make sure that you're not the victim. There was a guy that was real influential with about the time that I was getting right with the Lord, and he was he was one of those guys that seemed to have kind of a touch with young men, and had a whole batch of us working for him in a construction company and so on and so forth. And in fact, he was the one that introduced me to Dr. Ruckman and all those things. But for what it's worth, you know, this guy had a problem in that he had a money problem. And he had this strange gift for helping guys at the same time exploiting them. I can't tell you how many people, including me, he wound up borrowing money from and never paying it back. And you know what? He was a great guy. And did, in all fairness, spiritually did me a great service. But boy, there was a couple of rough years there when he wasn't paying me my money back. And I finally called him up one day and said, it's yours. It's tearing me up. Just forget about it. Because it was just, you know. But that story was consistent for as long as I knew him, and that was a period of 8 or 10 years. Okay? So, you know, you got to be careful with money matters. You knew that already. All right, back to verse 5. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. Verse 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Okay, go to the ant, thou sluggard. You see in verse 6, if you have paragraph marks in your Bible, that you have a change of subject here. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Now, folks, a sluggard is a bad thing. Okay, look in your Bibles in a few places here, and there's a ton of passages about sloth and so on. Look in Proverbs chapter 13 real quick. Proverbs 13. Verse 4. And this is what eats up a ton of people in America. The soul, verse 4, 13:4, of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. It says in one place that the desire will kill, that kind of desire will kill a man. And the idea is you have, we in this country have developed several different subclasses of people that desire to live like a Hollywood movie star and aren't willing to lift a finger to get it. I mean, it's amazing. Where do people get that are poor and can't afford a car and can't afford to get to work? Where do they get money for an 85-inch TV? Along with all the cigarettes you can smoke, all the beer you can drink, and all the cable channels that you could watch in 500 years of life. You know what I mean? But boy, you know, you see some people driving around in Escalades and really snoozed out cars, but they don't have any money. How does that thing work, folks? You now live in a day where you can live that like that for a period because you can get enough credit to buy out the wazoo on credit cards and then set yourself up for problems for the rest of your life. Okay, look, the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. There's a spiritual import to that, I'll grant you. I mean, it's one thing to want to be spiritual. It's another thing to study to show thyself approved unto God. There's a difference, okay? There's a difference of wanting to be a prayer warrior and being one. But the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. But the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Now, again, it's spiritual too. But, folks, there is a lot to be said for plugging along. You know? I mean, I can't explain it all, and I learned a long time ago with money that sometimes it isn't explicable by what you have on a spreadsheet, because you can't, as a Christian, forget the God factor in that thing, and God can bless you in a way that a spreadsheet can't explain. Now, I'm not promising you prosperity and great wealth or anything like that, but I have learned that diligence goes a long way. And if you can't get a $35 an hour job, then get a $10 an hour job until you can get a $30 an hour job. Because God will reward a guy trying when he won't reward a guy sitting on his duff. All right, go back to Proverbs chapter 20 now. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. There's a lot in here, folks. In this country, we have to watch ourselves. You know, I don't know if you realize. Well, you'd realize it, but you realize how the Christian ethic is being hammered and torn down at every turn, absolutely from every conceivable angle. Everything from sexual purity to just down-home honesty, to just down-home hard work. Folks, I got news for you. You got candidates right now that are running for the President of the United States, and they're planning to tax everybody to death and give all the wealth away. We're talking about the redistribution of wealth like you've never seen before in your life. You know, they just passed this big thing here in this state, you know, with all this, the tax, well, whatever they call it, transportation stuff. What is it, 15, 20 billion, whatever it is, you know, folks? I don't know if you know this or not, but our state has more roads and freeways per capita than just about any state in the United States of America. Okay? Don't tell me they can't squeeze money out of some other place. Because they can, but they're a bunch of crooks. That's my cynical comment for the day. The only cynical one of the entire day. What did I say? Proverbs chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20 and again verse 4. Proverbs chapter 20 verse 4. The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. All right, folks, a sluggard always has an excuse. Okay? Now, you know what? In Minnesota, you ought to laugh at that. I mean, if you didn't plow by reason of the cold, you'd never plow, except in August. All right? But a sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. Well, that sluggard, you know, his problem is that he will look for any excuse, and he thinks that he can only plow when absolutely all of the when the scenario is just right. when the weather's right and the sun's shining and the birds are twittering and everything's fine. I got news for you. There's just not that many times in life that all those things fall in. You know, if you can't work under duress and work, you know, when you don't feel like it, then I don't know when you will work. Right? Look in Proverbs chapter 24. Proverbs 24, verse 30. I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of a man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well, looked upon it, received instruction. And I guess the lesson is, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth. It's just a little at a time. I mean, thorns grow relatively slowly. The nettles settle in relatively slowly. But, you know, it's like prayer and everything else. You know, you go rusty for about a week, and you got a lot of work to do to catch back up, you know. And, look in Proverbs chapter 26. Proverbs 26, 16. By the way, I like verse 13. The slothful man saith, there's a lion in the way. A lion is in the streets. Like I say, any excuse will do. Sometimes they're even made up excuses. You know, like I said, you know, we have now developed in this country an entire multiple subclasses of people who think it their lot to live freely. Look, I am sorry your great-great-grandparents were slaves. I'm sorry. I don't know if my great-great-grandparents were slave owners. I really don't. But that's not my problem. And I got news for you. It's not your problem either. Look, if the great white hunter came in and killed off your tribe in their teepees, I am sorry. But that is no excuse for you not to work today. It's just not. Proverbs 26:13. The slothful man saith, there is a lion in the way, a lion's in the streets. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. Don't tell me the Bible has no sense of humor. I mean, this guy's crazy. It's turning on a hinge in bed, you know. The slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. It grieveth him to bring it again to his mouth. This guy's too lazy to feed himself. You know, it's just... Verse 16, the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. He will find a way not to work. You know? Look in Proverbs chapter, let's go back a couple. Look at 22:13 real quick. Proverbs 22. Oh, I've already seen that one. Look at Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21. Verse 25, this is what I was talking about a while ago. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. All right, so we go back. Go back to Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. That ant is talked about over in Proverbs 30. And, you know, if there's, you know, the ant has stood, you know, as a beckon for people even that didn't have a Bible for a long time as far as preparation and teamwork and hard work and so on and so forth. But in verse, where is it? Is in France that they now work, you know, 30-hour weeks or some such thing? It's just a big socialistic society. You know, folks, we've come to a day that we think that, you know, the idea of working 12-hour days is outrageous. And if you don't have to work a 12-hour day, that's a blessing. I mean, that's good, right? But You know, I don't know if you know it or not, but in the New Testament, a workday was a 12-hour day. You ever notice that? You remember the Lord of the vineyard that went in and started hiring laborers, and he hired the first hour of the day, came back throughout the day, and finally in the 11th hour, he hired somebody for another hour. That's a 12-hour workday, brother, for a penny. That's a 12-hour workday. All right, now I'm not saying that, I'm glad that most of us don't have to work 12-hour days and all that, and so if you don't, that's a blessing. But there's also something wrong when somebody says, you know, we want a 30-hour work week. And we still want, you know, our pension, we still want our health insurance, we still want our retirement, and we still want, you know, we still want. Verse 6, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which, having no guide, overseer, or ruler. Now, you know, we have guides, overseers, and rulers. But even if a, you know, folks, if a stupid ant can work like an ant, you know, by instinct and with a brain the size of a pinhead, surely it's not inconceivable that we should be able to work, huh? Verse 7, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. I know we're talking about miracles in nature here, where, like I said, in something that has a brain, you know, just a few neural synapses that rub together, you know, virtually no brain at all, yet these instincts, you know, are still, you know, all there. So, you know, it's really cool. So the only thing that you can lead that can lead us to is that, you know, with brains the size of ours, with the computing power that our brains have, what must happen is we must talk ourselves out of work and diligence and prudence and wise, discreet choices. We must be so smart that we talk ourselves out of what an ant knows it has to do. Verse 9, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. Any questions or comments? Bryce. Well, surety is like guaranteeing debts. And making sure thy friend is going to the friend and making sure that he's your friend because he has you where he wants you if he wants to exploit you. By the way, I forgot to run through these. There are places in the Bible, folks, that sureties are good. Just so you know. Okay? I can take you to passages where certain times sureties are good. Somebody being a surety. So it's not all completely just negative, but the idea in general is that if you're making a business out of guaranteeing your friend's debts, you're going to get burned really bad. Anything else? Chris. It means that a guy's traveling and your poverty comes down the road like he comes. It comes upon you that quickly. Thy poverty comes as one that traveleth. Poverty travels around and visits people that sleep too much. Denny? But Denny, you make so much money. You deserve to pay some of our ways. Amen, brother. Amen. Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I'm not trying to move you to political action necessarily, but I got an email today, and I went ahead and called. This transportation tax thing that went through that the state legislature overrode Polanyi's veto, right? Did you know that your county commissioners have to pass those? They still have to pass those. And so if you put enough pressure on your county commissioners, if you know who your county commissioners are, they still have to pass those gas taxes and so on. So all you have to do is go find out who your county... If I were you, I call mine today. I'm not ultra political, activist or anything like that. But, you know, I resent what they did. My roads are fine. And, you know, it's just whatever. Anyway, I probably shouldn't go there. But if you will go find out who your county commissioners are and just call your county commissioner's office. They will take your name, and I verified with the girl there today that yes, they do have to vote those increases through. So you can call and still affect some of it, hopefully, for what it's worth. Anyway, let's sing one before we go, I guess. Let's sing 140. Maybe if we sing it, he'll come back and get us out of here.
Oh.
We'll see you guys this weekend.